Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It's Monday, May 19th, 2014, beautiful summer day here in Clearwater, Florida. And I just spent the weekend in Raleigh, North Carolina at the conference for Touchstone Essentials. I play commercials for their products every day on this show, and I talk about the 33 servings of broccoli in the supplements or the zeolite that removes toxic chemicals from your body. Those all come from Touchstone Essentials. And I was just once again so impressed with this company. The conference was just so professionally done, and they continue to have such outstanding products, and people continue to have so many wins from taking them. I just see people's health improving. These are people that I've been promoting these products for 2 years, and I've seen these people over this 2 year period, and I just see people's health improving. One of the things that I learned that was new that I didn't know was that toxic chemicals in your cells can actually block the nutrition that you're taking in from your food and your supplements. The toxic chemicals can block that nutrition from even coming into the cell. And nutrition needs to get into your cells in order for you, your body to be nourished. And by taking the zeolite product called Pure Body, and also then taking really, really pure supplements that are not made from food, but made of food, just food, and nothing but food in the supplements. By doing that, you really nourish your cells and you nourish every part of your body. And it was just so, so clear to me, because I see other people, I see it in myself. I've been taking these for 2 years. And it was just another confirmation that I'm doing the right thing by doing it. I wrote my book, Toxic Free, before this company even started. And it's been around for a little over 2 years. But a few years ago, I wrote Toxic Free, and the conclusion I came to when I was writing that book was that it's that one thing that we should be doing, as I've been saying for more than 30 years, is remove the toxic chemicals from our homes. But we're at a point where what we need to do is remove the toxic chemicals from our bodies also, and we need to get better nutrition, because our food supply just is not giving it to us. So then along came Touchstone Essentials, and they have these products that remove the toxic chemicals from your body, and they give us superior nutrition. And I just want to say that once again, I went and I met with them and I know everybody in the company. I know everybody on the staff. I know the founder. I know all the executives, and I'm just so impressed with these products. So give a listen when you hear these commercials, and you might want to take a look at these products, because if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about improving your health or improving your health, these are some products to be looking at. They are products I take and products that I recommend, and they're doing something important. Because toxic chemicals, if you have toxic chemicals in your body, it's going to impair your health in one way or another. Anyway, that's my commercial message for the moment. Today we're going to be talking about toys. And my guest is Jim Barber. He's a managing partner with MWB Toy, who is developing some toys through the brand Luke's Toy Shop. I think I got that right. Luke's Toy Factory there. My computer is down this morning, my internet, and so I can't actually go to my website, and I have all these little notes on my screen. Okay, Luke's Toy Factory. And the thing that's different about this show, usually I have on people who have already manufactured products, and I'll give you their website and you can go buy them. But what's different about this one is that they're still in development, and they are using the Kickstarter program to come up with money to go into manufacturing. And if you want to, you can go to their Kickstarter program and make a donation. And this is what's called crowdfunding. Some of you may be familiar with that. If you want to know more about it, you can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, and the The link to do that is right in the description, at the end of the description of this show. Hi, Jim. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. So first, tell us how you got interested in this subject. What made you want to make toys?
Well, I'll tell you, Deborah, the thing is, my kids are actually grown. I'm past the age when I really paid a lot of attention to toys. But a few years ago, I guess around 2009, when we started hearing all these stories about some of the things that were in the paint coming from toys from China, I started looking at some of my kids' toys, and especially some of the toys that had been recalled, and I realized that I had some of these toys. And that when I really started looking, I found that 99% of the toys I had were made in China. When you really start looking on carefully, you start thinking, well, what's really in these toys? So I started doing some research just as in, you know, just to be interested in what was going on, and I started finding out that there are a lot of heavy metals in the paints. There's a lot of lead is just one of the heavy metals that you find. You find arsenic, you find cadmium. There's a whole range of things. And then the other issue is that, you know, with a lot of the wood, there's formaldehyde in the plywood. So I started thinking, well, you know, there's got to be a better way to make these things. And then I read about this material that they're using in decking. It's called wood plastic composites. And what it is they take a regular plastic and they replace part of it, 30 to 40%, with sawdust. So what you have is, you, number one, you're taking away plastic, and number two, you're adding what was a waste product to this material so that it transforms it from being plastic to being a hybrid between the two. So I thought, well, that might be a way to make the toys. And then I started, you know, doing more research and getting more deeply into the whole process.
Well, what was it? Why did you feel that when you saw these toys, we talked before, so I know that you were cleaning out your basement and you found these toys. I mean, obviously your children are grown and, they're not playing with them now, but you had stored some toys and you were going through them and you're looking at that. And what was that moment like when you were looking at them and made this decision that was so powerful that you decided that you needed to make some toys?
Well, see, one of the things, I mean, I don't know if my kids are unique in this, but, you know, when it comes time to throw something out, it's like, oh, no, I don't want to throw that out. You throw the other thing out, but don't throw my stuff out, even though they're grown. It's like, you know, I want to keep all these toys. But I guess the real surprise to me was that these were toys and toy companies that I trusted and that I knew their names. And when I grew up as a kid, all these toys were the brand names we played with.
Right.
And I felt almost a sense of betrayal because when I started really researching this, you know, you can go on the Consumer Product Safety Commission website and you can see all the recalls that are being done on these toys. And it's astonishing how many of these toys get recalled.
And what do they get recalled for? What kinds of things?
Mostly it's mechanical issues. Things will not be well made. A lot of toys use screws and they use fastening devices. The thing about the toy industry is it's all about price. So how do you get the price down? You cut quality.
We need to go to a break, but when we come back, we'll talk about this more. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio, and my guest today is Jim Barber, and he is developing toxic-free, eco-friendly toys, and we'll talk to him more when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Jim Barber of Luke's Toy Factory. And they're developing toys that are toxic free and eco-friendly. And we were just talking about how Jim found these toys left over in his, or he was storing in his basement, and said, nope, we're not going to have those anymore, and wanted to create something better. And the way he's financing this is with a Kickstarter campaign. So if you're interested in contributing to that, you can go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com and look for his show. And at the end of the description is the link to his Kickstarter campaign, which is quite long, which is why I'm not trying to describe it to you over the radio. So we were talking about, what were we talking about before the break? Anyway, let's go on and just talk about the materials. Let's talk about
this idea.
Let's talk about some of the materials that are used. You talked about them a little bit in your story, but let's talk more about some of the toxic chemicals that are found in commonly in toys.
Well, generally, you have to differentiate between wooden toys and plastic toys. The way that most plastic toys are made with relatively safe materials, depending on, you know, what kind of additives are put in them. Sometimes you can put additives into the plastic to keep away things like mold, or to make them less susceptible to sunlight, things like that. But for the most part, most toys are made out of a material called polypropylene or ABS. Another one is HDPE, and all these are different kinds of plastics.
But aren't some made also out of PVC?
Yes. Yeah. Anything that has a thin, flexible kind of feeling to it is probably made with PVC. There's a lot of different ways to create a toy, but one of the ideas and one of the things that PVC, you know, does well is that it conforms to a very thin mold. And the more plastic you use, the more money it costs. So PVC is a very popular product. PVC is not a particularly good plastic in my estimation. I'm not an expert on plastics.
Well, it's not a good plastic in other people's estimations as well. In fact, Greenpeace for many years has had a campaign trying to get people to stop using PVC altogether because of its toxicity. They consider it to be the most toxic plastic on the planet. And I would agree with that. And so that's one of the reasons here. One of the reasons why I was interested in having you on today is because so many toys are made of PVC, which is a soft plastic. It's outgassing carcinogenic fumes. And children are playing with that, and you're offering an alternative to that. I wish that toys were marked with very clear symbols or labels that would say this toy is PVC and this one's made out of polypropylene, which is less toxic, and HDPE, which is less toxic, and ABS, which is less toxic. But we can't tell the difference because the toys aren't required to be labeled.
Well, it's interesting because there's a lot of requirements for labeling for safety. I mean, all our toys have to be tested for safety. But there isn't a lot of labeling in terms of recycling. And, you know, we're hoping that in the future, of course, that changes. One of the things we're looking at is providing a recycling solution for these toys. If you, you know, if your kid outgrows a toy, you're just going to throw it in the trash, we'll take it back. You know, we're trying to keep people from just throwing things away. A lot of people pass toys on, but some people don't. We're living in more of a throwaway society. But the plastic that we're using, what we're trying to do is replace part of the plastic with this essentially what is sawdust. What they've done is they've developed these plastics that is a hybrid of wood and plastic, but can be injection molded so that you can make a toy and, you know, somewhere between 30% and 40% at this point of the material is a benign wood flower, you know, it's pine or oak, things like that. So, you know, it's all about taking steps. I wish it could be 100% recycled, but I'm having a hard time finding a source for recycled plastic where the source will certify to me that it's safe. Because no one can say that someone didn't throw a can of insecticide.
Yeah. That was an interesting thing that I saw. I think it was in your press release. Tell us a little bit more about that, about why recycled might not be non-toxic.
Well, a lot of it has to do with where do you get the material. If you get what's called post-consumer waste, there's very little control over what actually goes into that stream of plastics. They have machines that can pull out the metals. They have different ways of separating things. But for the most part, you can't really guard against the person who just happens to throw something in there, not looking at the bottom of the container and putting it in the wrong stream. So where most of the recycled plastic comes from for the kind of thing that I'm doing is what's called post-industrial waste, which means that, you know, you're at a factory, and the way the injection molding system works is there's always some leftover bits of plastic. If you think of if you've ever made like little models as a kid where you open up the box and there's everything is all stuck together on one frame and you have to cut the little pieces off.
Yep, I remember that.
that's the injection molding process at work.
We need to go to another break, but we'll be right back. I'm Deborah Lindat. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and my guest today is Jim Barber, and he's developing some toxic free toys through a company called Luke's Toy Factory. And he has a Kickstarter campaign, which you can contribute to. Just go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com, and you can see his show, and the URL for the Kickstarter campaign is right there at the end. And we'll be right back to talk to him more about toxic free toys. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindat, and my guest today is Jim Barber, and he's developing a new toxic free toys at Luke's Toy Factory is the brand, and they have a Kickstarter campaign. So they're not in production yet, but you can make a contribution to their Kickstarter campaign to make this happen. And you go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com, and the URL for that will be there at the end of the description of the show. So Jim, when you decided that you were going to make a toy that wasn't toxic and didn't come from China and everything was going to be in the U.S., how did you get started doing that? What was your first step?
Well, the first step was research. I found that I like to learn things, and I found that, you know, the first thing to do is talk to other people and find out what has been done in the past. There is one company that's called Green Toys out in California that's been doing this for a while, and they're kind of the inspiration for me. These are the people that they make their toys out of recycled milk bottles. That's a HDPE material.
Mm-hmm. They have a different design. For our listeners who don't know what that is, that's high density polyethylene, which is very non-toxic.
Well, that's my understanding. You know, again, you can. I do a lot of research, and what we try to do was to identify sources of materials that are the least toxic, the least the safest materials we can. So there are resources for that. There are ways to identify that. But the big thing was I went to a trade show down in Florida where they had a it was called the National Plastics Exposition, and they had literally everybody in the whole business was there. So I just ran from place to place saying, look, here's what I want to do. Give me some ideas. And I met some very interesting people, and you know, that kind of built on itself. But I just kept doing a lot of research on the materials and trying to connect with as many people as I could with the idea that even though it's something new, there has to be somebody out there who's willing to try it. And that's the big problem with the whole – because the toy industry is gone from the United States, the people who are left here that are still in business basically don't want to deal with it because it's a low-margin business. They'd rather work in, you know, medical or aerospace or things like that. So trying to get somebody to really take a chance on this was one of the biggest problems. But we kept at it, and then I found a place here in Connecticut, a guy who was willing to give it a try. And I found a guy up in Massachusetts to do the tooling, which is the expensive part of injection molding. And I found some great resources with companies here in the United States who are really trying to take plastics and make them more sustainable. There's a place out in Michigan that I've been talking to, and they were one of the people that really worked very hard at trying to bring the science forward, even though they didn't really have a client for it. A lot of times, you know, these guys, they don't want to develop a product until someone comes to them and says, I want to make this product out of this, and then they figure out how it works. But this company said, we'll make the product, we'll make the material, and then try to sell it to people. You know, try to sell it to manufacturers, which is how I came across them. So there are people here in the U.S. who are looking forward and trying to see a day when we can not necessarily eliminate plastics, but at least take away, you know, half of the material and replace it with organic materials that are not from the food stream.
I have a number of questions I want to ask you. I'm trying to figure out which one to say first. Well, here's the first one. You're talking about recycling, and the wood, the sawdust that you're putting in, that's recycled from, right? It comes from furniture manufacturing or something?
Furniture manufacturers, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so now you have... See, the good thing about that... Go ahead.
Well, tell me what the good thing about it is, and then I'll ask my question.
Well, the good thing is that when you go to like a furniture manufacturer, you can identify where the material came from. You know what's in there. You know that somebody didn't throw something in there that shouldn't have been in there. For instance, to go back to China, one of the places that they get a lot of their wood for different things is wood pallets and shipping containers and things like that, and you have no idea what might have spilled on them or you know, where they got them from. Whereas with, you know, the places that we're identifying, it's certified as safe.
It's certified as safe. I haven't heard that before. So so it actually goes through a certification process, or they attest to that, or how do you know?
Yeah, I mean, basically what they do is they track the material. They put it in things called Gaylords, which is a size of shipping container, and they ship it to the plastic manufacturers. So they know that it came from this factory on this particular production run, and this was the material that they were using, whether it's pine or oak or whatever. And they, you know, they can track what went into this material.
I see.
As opposed to saying, well, you know, we just took this, you know, bunch of old wood we had and ground it up.
That's a very different thing, and I think that that's an important point that I didn't know anything about before until I talked to you, is that when you see recycled on a label, you know that that's good for the environment because it's reusing something that would have otherwise gone into a landfill or into the environment someplace. But from a toxic viewpoint, as you said, you really don't know if it's post-consumer and they're just taking a lot of stuff. You don't know what else might be in there. So this is where I remember when I was researching recycling some years ago, that people thought that post-consumer was preferable to, what was the term that you used that comes from the manufacturer?
Post-industrial.
Yeah. That post-consumer was preferable to post-industrial because the post-industrial waste was just going back in the pot, so to speak, in the factory, but that post-consumer was, oh, we need to go to break. I'll finish this when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and today we're talking with my guest, Jim Barber of Luke's Toy Factory, about making toxic-free toys, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Jim Barber from Luke's Toy Factory, and he's making toxic-free and eco-friendly toys, and that's what we're talking about. Now, before the break, we were talking about the difference between post-industrial and post-consumer waste, and we got interrupted by the break. So I'll finish my sentence, which is that if we're looking at recycled plastics or recycled anything from a toxic point of view, if you have post-consumer waste, then there may be some unknown toxic chemicals in there because we don't know what some consumer might have done, putting insecticide in a plastic bottle or wiped up some toxic spill with a paper or whatever it happens to be, that there's a lot of opportunities for consumers to use toxic things. And in a post-industrial situation, if it's post-industrial recycled material, then they can say, here's where this material came from. And you can track if there's been toxic exposures or not toxic exposures. And so now here we have a toy that's being manufactured, and the manufacturer can tell you that they know that this recycled material does not contain toxic stuff because it comes from, it's been tracked, the source is tracked, and they know that it's recycled from this type of wood from furniture manufacturer. That is, I hope that when you get down to manufacturing and making these products available, that you'll write all this stuff out so that your customers know exactly where these excellent materials are coming from. I mean, it's not so important for them to know the exact factory, but that they know that it's post-industrial as opposed to post-consumer. That level of detail usually doesn't get known.
Well, you're absolutely correct about that. And that's one of the things that we can do, because we know where things were made, when they were made, and how they were made. One of the interesting things, again, about the companies that are creating these materials for us to use, the first thing that I say to everybody that I talk to is the number one thing is safety. I don't want to hurt kids. When my son Luke, who designs the toys, the most important thing is we want to make sure that it's safe. So the parts have to be big enough that you can't choke on them. But also, one of the great things about this is that when you color these things, because kids like bright colors, so when you color these things, it's done in the mold inside the plastic. It's encapsulated, so there's no surface paint. And, kids like to chew on things. Kids put things in their mouth. It's one of their sensory inputs. So, that's one of the problems with getting, a wooden toy that has surface paint on it, is sooner or later that paint's going to come off. And you have to hope. I mean, one of the stories that somebody told me was they were over in China, and this was after the whole uproar over lead paint, and they were supposedly getting very, you know, clean, good paint. But the guy ran out of a certain color of paint, went in the back room and found some cans of paint and threw it into the machine. Well, it turned out to be lead paint.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's no one there overseeing the operation. And then at night, when they clean the machines, they clean them with gasoline. So, there's another source of lead.
So here's something that is, I think, a very important point, and that is you as a toy manufacturer are thinking about all of these things, that you have this idea that and this commitment to having things be safe. You're aware of you can tell us this story and say, well, he used this toxic chemical, he used that toxic chemical. And so when you're in the factory and you're needing to manufacture something or specify how it gets manufactured, then you are not making those mistakes because you have an awareness of it and you care about it and you want to make sure that it's done right. A lot of toy manufacturers don't have that ethic. They just don't have it. And so this is where consumers, when they're looking for how do I make a decision, well, the thing to do is make a decision to buy a toy from someone like you who's thinking about these things and acting upon them.
Well, and that goes back to the manufacturer that we're using too, this injection molder. I mean, you can go into some of these shops, which I have gone in, I've probably visited 20 or 30 different injection molders and trying to find somebody to work with. And some of these places are filthy. There's literally cat litter under the machines catching whatever's dripping out of them. A lot of the machines are hydraulic powered, and there's an oil mist on everything. So again, the guy I'm using, he's really, really clean. He has a scientific approach to things, and it's a little more expensive, but it's worth it because,
yeah,
like I said, one thing is I want to make sure that, I'm doing the right thing for kids. What I really want to have happen from all this is I want other people to do exactly what I'm doing. I want them to bring their manufacturing back here, put Americans to work, and make sure that the kids are safe.
What a great thing. I just want to applaud you because I wish that everybody would do that. I wish that everybody would think that way. And it's a very good thing to do. Very good thing to do. So I'm just going to make sure that I say again that you're doing a Kickstarter campaign. And for people who agree with this, please go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com and find the link to his Kickstarter campaign and make a donation. Why don't you explain, Jim, how a Kickstarter campaign works?
Well, it's an interesting process because it kind of it's a cross between a donation and an actual sale, because when you make a donation, there are different levels of rewards. You create what's called rewards. So, for instance, with us, for $20, you can get one of the first production toys, the little fire truck that we're making, and that includes shipping in the U.S. So that's a pretty good deal for to get a toy and have it shipped to you. The trade-off you make is you're not going to get it tomorrow. You're going to get it when the Kickstarter program is finished, and then we go into production. And what we do is we make an estimate on when we will have the production done, and we're estimating August, to be safe, we are saying September, that we will have all these things shipped out. There's different levels of rewards. You can get one truck, you can get three trucks. You can also make a donation and say no reward. I have, some people that say, well, I don't have kids, I don't need the toy, but I like the idea. And you take a certain time period, and in this case we're taking till June 8th, and you have to make your goal. Our goal was $15,000. And we just broke $4,000 now. So we're getting there. We're getting there, but we need all the help we can get.
Mm-hmm.
And the project is actually called Eco Truck, ECOT T-R-U-C-K. I have to think a second there. So if you can't find it easily, you can just go on Kickstarter.com and search for Ego Truck, and you will find us. They have a very interesting, excuse me. They have a very interesting, way of, creating the campaigns. It's a really nice process because it gives people who otherwise wouldn't have much of a chance. It's very hard to go to a bank and say, I have this idea, and if you could just lend me the money, I can prove this idea can work. Well, the banks will say to you, come back when you have a product. Whereas with Kickstarter, you can say, I have this idea, and people will look at it and say, wow, it's a great idea. I'd like to, you know, see that happen. And it's a huge new thing. I think Kickstarter just finished raising, they in total have raised over $5 billion.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. And if you go to, their page, there's a little video, and then they have the different offers. And so, like, if it says what you get if you pledge $1 or more or $5 or more. And it tells you how many people have contributed, in what category. And, pledged $50 or more. The most pledged $15, somewhere between $15 and $20. But then second place right after that is $50 or more. And I think that's great. I think that is showing a lot of support for what you're doing. You can get these little trucks in different colors. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a great project. And if you're a parent or a grandparent, and it even shows the little pellets and the materials and the people and a whole explanation. And there's a lot of information here about what it is that they're doing. And just great, 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 great. Well, we have to go. We've only got about 15 seconds left. So thank you so much for being on the show. And I really appreciate what you're doing. You're listening to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And be well.